Pure Dog Talk is the podcast on purebred dogs. We talk to the legends in the sport and give you tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Pure Dog Talk is sponsored by ChampionshipBreeders.com. Championship Breeders is a proud supporter of the American Kennel Club, our specialty and all breed clubs, our dog sports, and the gifts of therapy and service from our canine companions. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I'm your host, Laura Reeves. Today is Mentor Monday, and we have one quick reminder from your Dog Show Superintendents Association. Get your entries in early. It's a win-win. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I'm your host, Laura Reeves, and we are joined today by definitely one of the legends in the sport, and this is Michelle Santana. She is the breeder of Foxfire Dobermans and breeder of the year a couple years ago, and she's going to talk to us about some pretty important stuff in our sport. So, Michelle, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for asking.
Well, I'd also like to give a shout out to our listener, John Ingstrom, who was the person who recommended we talk to you. And I thought it was a great idea because you've been a huge supporter from the beginning. So this was perfect.
I'll have to get back to John.
No, this isn't a revenge thing, Michelle. Come on. Okay.
Revenge is the puppy people.
It's good. So, Michelle, how many years in Dobermans? 36 years, is that possible?
Yeah, about 35. My mom purchased our very first Doberman in 1979, although she had Dobermans when I was about 5 or 6, but they didn't pan out. They bit the neighbors and had to be returned to the breeders.
That's not a good thing.
No.
No.
Doberman temperaments have come a long way since then.
Yes, yes, indeed they have. So this is a family thing. I know you did this with your mom. And what kept you going with the Dobermans? What do you enjoy the most about this breed?
Well, I originally actually picked the Collie from the book Albert Pace and Terhune. And of course, Lassie, they roped me in. And I always had a dream to breed collies like the Sunnybank Collies of Albert Pace and Terhune, but my colleague didn't want to cooperate. He wasn't good enough to do confirmation, so then I went into obedience and actually put a CD on him, which is the only dog I ever put an obedience degree on because it was so humiliating. I'm now afraid of obedience. So when he was not going to go for his CDX, I turned to my mom's Doberman puppy and took her over. And it was just a click. They're highly intelligent and quite labor-intensive, actually.
Labor-intensive in what way, Michelle?
Well, you have to try to keep one step ahead of them. They are quite a destructive breed, so they can manage to figure out how to chew up anything, even the siding on your house out in the backyard. You have to get their ears to stand, so that's 6 months of ear rolling. They're very strong, so they want to drag you everywhere. It's a tough breed, but they're well worth it.
Yep, smart. You got to be smarter than the dog. That's one of those things.
Yes, it's not always as easy as it sounds.
It's true. So you were Breeder of the Year voted on by your peers, right? That was a Winky Award?
Actually, I've won two different Breeder of the Year. I was nominated by an AKC committee to be the AKC Working Group Breeder of the Year back in 2010, and that was very exciting. I got to be on television as they put the medallion around your neck down at the Yukonuba Invitational. That year was in Long Beach, California, so at least I didn't have far to travel. And yeah, it was really wonderful. And then a couple of years later in, I want to say 2013, you go to the event in February, but you're actually awarded it like the year before. But that was the Dogs in Review Winky for Outstanding Breeder.
Excellent.
So that was, and that is voted on by the subscribers and readership and anybody else who gets a ballot from Dogs in Review.
Right.
So that, yeah, quite an honor it is about your peers voting you as an outstanding dog person.
That is. Those are both pretty amazing awards, Michelle. And we were talking a little bit, and you were talking about purpose-bred dogs, kind of carrying on that conversation that we heard from Bill Shelton, who I understand was a pretty major mentor of yours along the way.
Yep. He started me out as a kid. I used to follow him around the country in my little Datsun pickup truck, showing my owner handled Dobermans, and he was the professional handler, and I emulated his handling techniques.
Successfully, quite clearly.
He started probably in the last year or two talking about purpose-bred dog, and I think that he really hit something that is a keynote, that we are purposefully breeding purebred dogs for traits that are consistent and reliable within the breeds and a look that's within the breed. So it's a little bit different than going to the shelter and picking out a cute little Sheltie-like dog and having it turn into a ginormous St. Bernard cross.
Terrifying possibility. And so the consistency of type and temperament is what you're striving for when you're working with your Dobermans, right?
Yes, I think that, you know, when people call and they say, you know, well, their last Doberman did X, Y, Z, it's like, well, that's a Doberman trait. Our next Doberman will do that too. It's, you know, we call them Velcro dogs, and, you know, they're going to follow you all into the bathroom. I sit on the couch crossing my legs before I have to go to the bathroom watching TV because they're all going to get up off the couch to follow Mama to the bathroom.
Well, you know, there could be monsters and they need to guard you.
This is true. So, yes, I think for purebred dogs, for all breeders that breed, whatever breed they choose, is about having a consistent, obviously, structure that you're going to have and a consistent temperament that you're going to have. And the public can rely on getting that when they come to you for whatever breed they choose.
Right. Okay. Well, you mentioned a little bit earlier, you were talking about some of the work that goes into maintaining a good Doberman. You were talking about their ears standing. And so I think that's a great segue into a topic that I think you're uniquely qualified to discuss. And I think it's an important one that people need to talk about. And that's working with cropped and docked breeds and why the cropping and docking is still done and why it is important to breed type.
Yes, a lot of the crop breeds are unique in that their silhouettes are key to them, to determining what they are if you are only looking at a silhouette. For instance, with the Doberman, when you see those cropped ears and that dock tail and the athletic nature of the breed and no hair, you're going to immediately know that that's a Doberman that you're looking at. If you were to look at a silhouette of a uncropped Doberman and an undocked Doberman, you could be looking at a Dalmatian or a Coonhound.
Or a Lab. I've seen a couple. Ooh.
Yeah, it's an important part of the Doberman in the United States of America. We're very saddened that the government or the veterinarian associations such as Canada adopted policies not to allow an individual to basically determine the veterinary care of their own animal. That's where it really relies. It's not just an elective surgery. It's no different than deciding whether you want to spay or neuter your dog. I don't believe the government or anybody should determine what you're going to do with your animal. It should be between the veterinarian and their client. And hopefully the United States of America will never adopt a policy that infringes on the right of a person to make their dog's health decisions between them and the veterinarian.
Yeah. And as you say, and I think is an important thing that we look at with some of these cropped and docked breeds, that is the picture. That is the essence of the breed, is that outline and that silhouette. You were talking a little bit about the function of what Dobermans were bred to do and how this particular health maintenance helped them do that job.
Yeah, oftentimes, particularly now because we have social media out on Facebook and in public when I'm walking my puppies around, you know, people mistakenly believe that ear cropping is a cosmetic surgery, and we don't do it for cosmetic reasons. We do it as a historical tradition of our breed. Back when our breed was created, it was created as a cropped and docked breed because it was the only personal protection dog bred purely for personal protection. So I take painstaking time to explain to individuals that the reason we cropped the dog back in the day and continue to do it now to honor the tradition is that it prevented perpetrators from being able to grab the ears of the dogs and make them basically let go of their attack. Mm-hmm. As we all know, the ears are very sensitive to a dog, and you could potentially grab the ears of a dog as it's biting your leg and twist the ears enough so that they would release their grip. And basically the same with the tail. A perpetrator could grab the tail and break the tail, and there's not many dogs that are going to continue an attack through a broken tail and damaged ears. So the ear cropping and the tail docking were purposefully done for utilitarian reasons in the purpose of the Doberman breed and for what it was bred for as a personal protection dog.
Well, and legitimately, the breed still serves that purpose in many, many, many instances today.
It does. They aren't used in the military like they were, but they were the Marine Corps dogs, the devil dogs back in the day in the
right.
World Wars. And, you know, there are certainly still some Dobermans that serve military installations, probably mostly for bomb detection and drug detection type scenarios. But yeah, there are still Dobermans that are police dogs, and they serve to protect. You know, definitely as our culture has evolved, canines are not utilized as the first line of protection. When people call me and say they want a dog for family protection, basically I ask them to describe more about what their expectation of the canine is, because our culture has evolved and now you're going to be sued. Your dog will be confiscated if it bites humans, could even have dangerous dog laws applied to it, vicious dog laws. So you have to be very careful with your dog now in our culture.
Interesting. Interesting. And we do still see them, or I assume you do still see them. I've seen a few working, as you say, in government, whether it's police or military or what have you.
Yeah, I think they've really been drawn more to Malinois, maybe shepherds. And I don't think that they utilize the Dobermans quite as much, probably because they are labor intensive. And because they are a short breed dog, they don't have an undercoat. You have to be careful when you send them to, you know, other countries. The country's cold or too hot. So I guess what I would say is that service, military, police lend towards shepherds and Malinois nowadays.
Okay. And what about the, I'm going to forget the name of it, the AKC sport, the working dog sport? Is it Schutzhund? But there's a specific, and I can't think of the name of it now. It just went out of my head.
Schutzhund changed the name to IPO. It's a sport. I wouldn't necessarily say it's a thriving sport, because you have to really have a lot of dedication to do the three prongs of that sport. One is tracking, one is the obedience aspect, and one is the protection aspect. And I am the handler of the only best in show Schutzhund Doberman in the history of our breed.
Wow. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, inspired by one of my dogs, and her owner contacted me with a dream to make her a best in show Doberman and get a Schutzhund IPO degree on her. And so we worked side by side in the same year. She would come and do training for Schutzhund, and then I'd head off to the dog shows, and I made her a best in show winner, and she made her a IPO one. Working with her, the gal's name was Susan Miller, and Ava, the Doberman. Do it all, Ava.
Oh my gosh.
Genius. Great respect for the immense dedication you have to do working dog sport. You know, up at the crack of dawn to go out and track, and you can only track during certain times of the year. You have foxtails and weeds, and it's way beyond my capability.
But still, I mean, that's an amazing accomplishment for a Doberman. I think that's fabulous.
Yeah, we're very excited about her.
Yeah. And so we're going back, we're talking about cropping and docking and its functionality with the breed. And you alluded to it, but I wanted to maybe draw out a little bit more, talking about how do we talk to the public when you see folks that question you when you've posted the dog's ears or, you know, something like that. What do you say? What's your language? What kind of tips can you give to other people who are working with a cropped or a docked breed?
Well, in public, when I'm walking a puppy around that has its ears rolled up in the tape and the caulking rod, which is just like a foam little rod, and people will say, oh, you know, did they just have surgery? Or, oh, don't touch their ears. I grab their ears and I'm like, no, this is just tape and caulking rod. The ears have been healed. It only takes 8 days for the ears to heal. We're only teaching the cartilage to stand straight with the tape and a little bit of foam, and you just squish the puppy's ears and the puppy's just like, oh, I just love being petted on the head, and they see that there's no pain involved. They get educated. And, you know, again, when you're having conversations with the public to describe why the Doberman is a crop breed and why it's a duck breed. And sometimes even on my Facebook pages, when we post little photos of the puppies and the wraps, you'll get some of the people commenting, and that I always take the time to explain to them exactly what the procedure is and that it's important for them to understand. There's one of the vet med sites with the Dr. Becker who has a position statement article that ear cropping is a mutilation of the ears, and it most certainly is not a mutilation of the ears, and it's not an invasive surgery. You aren't entering the body cavity. You're just taking a snippet of cartilage off of the ears, and you suture them, and you take the sutures out in 7 days, and a few days later the edges are healed and you're good to go. And also, less so, but an important aspect is to remind people that dogs in the wild, wolves, coyotes, foxes, none of them have down ears. Down ears are a creation of man, so we're just making our dog's ears stand back up.
That's a really valid point. Absolutely. So as you're doing the education, you're helping improve the sport for other people. And we were talking a little bit too about working with kids, helping the kids. I know you do a lot of work with juniors that show Dobermans. How is it that you can help, and your suggestions to other people that they can help move the sport forward?
Well, juniors is a topic that will make me cry.
I know.
I think that juniors are the key to our sport, so we always embrace the kids. We try to supply them with really good dogs that will excel in juniors so that they will be rewarded for the hard work of going into juniors. We have taken a couple of juniors under our wings and finance them to go to UConuba or Westminster once they've qualified. You know, we give them lessons at the dog shows. We'll take them to the dog shows. We try to teach them all aspects of the dog shows. I'm very proud that for several years running now, the number one Doberman Junior and the number one working group junior have been two different juniors of ours with Foxfire Dobermans for about 4 years running now. And one aged out and the next one took over, and she became the number one working group junior for 2 years. So it's very rewarding. And, you know, then you take those juniors and you take their dogs, and each one owned a bitch, and we bred them. And hopefully the one junior, the last year, she helped show the puppies and finish the two puppies from the litter and help caretake for them. The puppies couldn't live with her because of the housing situation, but just to make them a part of coming over and being with the puppies for a couple of weeks and watching them and making sure they're up at the nipples and take them to the dog shows and socialize them and train them to show and then be able to go in and become breeder owner handlers.
And that's pretty amazing. I love that you're encouraging not just the handler piece, but the breeder and the owner piece as well.
Yeah, it won't do us any good if we just have the juniors there for the ribbons. They have to want to have the desire to continue the breeding, and that is going to be a very big shortfall for our sport in the coming decades, because even the handlers, they're not breeding, they're just showing. And us breeders are all getting old, and there's not a volume of people coming up creating the dogs. So I don't know, in years to come, there's going to be a huge pitfall of breeds not being produced.
So I guess what I'm hearing is your suggestion is go mentor a breeder in your breed.
I mean, breeding is a lot of work. I don't think people appreciate the amount of time on your knees, bruising your knees, breaking your back, caring for the puppies, the stress over nursing them, and the sleepless nights on the couch, the sleep deprivation.
It's true. It's true.
Can't carry on a conversation for an entire week after the puppies are born. It's a lot of work, and I don't necessarily see where breeders are accolated for all of the hard work of actually raising puppies. If anything, our society is anti-breeder and adopt, don't shop. We have a lot of work ahead of us.
Yeah, well, that's what we're trying to do. And the other quick point I want to make before we wrap up for today, one of the notes that you made that you shared with me that I think is really so important, I think very few people talk about, and that is being a mentor to your puppy buyers and really kind of raising your puppy buyers along with their puppy.
Absolutely. It's 24/7 mentorship. My puppy people are quite amazing, and you try to set them up with as much information as you possibly can, which fortunately for them, they inherit a mama bear. And now it's like there's so many different ways to communicate. It's text messaging, Facebook messaging, emails, phone calls. And I'm like, okay, I know I got a message from so-and-so. Where is it?
Could be in any one of six places. I know, Michelle, it sucks.
Yeah, it's difficult. It's like, God, was it Facebook? Was it texting? But yeah, and to tell the puppy people, turn to your breeder first.
Yes.
Hopefully, if they're an established breeder, they're going to have more information about your breed and your dog than any other source. I always scratch my head when you go on Facebook and somebody's asking a question of 20,000 strangers.
Right.
I'm like, ask your breeder.
Yes.
But some of them don't have breeders, so that it's a resource. But still, I happen to be an admin on a Facebook Doberman chat list of 20,000 people, and I'm only there solely for educational purposes. I was asked to be an admin to lend a leg of the AKC confirmation world to an otherwise list of just pure pet owners, which is great, but to be able to educate them, and some of the people that respond back to questions, you're just like, no, don't do that. Don't do that.
No, please don't do that.
Don't do that. I would not advocate that. Don't do that. But it's important for people that know the breed to be there for people who, it might be their first Doberman. And if they don't have anywhere to turn, they need credible, knowledgeable education. And John Q. Public needs a lot of education on dog ownership, because that's not a course you can take in college.
No, it's not. And I think you make a really valid point, Michelle, that sometimes those of us who've been, around the block and been there and done that and had the t-shirt, we get frustrated and we get maybe even just the tiniest little bit irritated. And so we walk away from things that really need us.
Yeah, there are days when I'm like, I'm not doing this anymore. But then if I don't, who will?
Right.
You have to avail yourself to the public. If we don't go out and teach the public and assist in meet the breeds, and, unfortunately, Facebook, it's just this mega social media empire that we all love and we all hate.
Yes.
But there, it's not going to go away, and we have to do the best we can to spend a little bit of time using that segue as an educational device.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much, Michelle. I really, really appreciate your time. You are a wonderful gift to the sport, and I look forward to seeing you down the road.
Great.
Thanks a lot.
As always, if you have any questions or input, we'd love to hear from you. The show notes and links to resources on today's topic are available at puredogtalk.com. Drop us a note in the comments or email to laura@puredogtalk.com. Remember, guys, this podcast is for you. So if you want to know something, give me a holler. We'll do a podcast for you. If you wouldn't mind, you could help me out here. Take a couple minutes to visit iTunes and give us a review. This will help share the love with others out there in the sport. This has been Pure Dog Talk with your host, Laura Reeves. We hope you can join us next time as we continue on the journey to success with your purebred dog.